It is Wednesday, September 13th, 2023. We are tracking the latest on Hurricane Lee. This is a live edition of the Carolina Weather Group. You are looking at the latest satellite imagery of Hurricane Lee, now a Category 2 hurricane with winds sustained at 105 miles an hour, as of the 8 p.m. update from the National Hurricane Center on this Wednesday, September the 13th, 2023, a little past 9 o'clock. I am James Brierton in Charlotte, and welcome to this special live edition of the Carolina Weather Group, as we are continuing to track Hurricane Lee out there in the Atlantic Ocean. Let me bring in my colleague, Frank Strait, who is joining us on our Carolina Weather Group panel from Columbia. And in just a moment, we're going to bring in a guest from the National Weather Service to help us understand the impacts of Hurricane Lee here in the Carolinas. But I think, Frank, the good news is with this storm, as we're showing our viewers who are watching live with us or listening along on Spotify, that the forecast cone for this storm will keep it off the Carolina coast. We are still watching for impacts, and we can now see on this Wednesday night that we have tropical storm watches up for portions of the New England coastline from Maine down through Rhode Island. And we have tropical storm warnings up for Bermuda. But Frank, it was just a week ago where eyes were on this storm, all staring at satellite images like this one from Dr. Levi Cowan of the storm that went from being an invest to a tropical storm to a hurricane to a Cat 5, all in the period of like 48 hours. It was pretty impressive, Frank. What were you thinking as you were watching that storm rapidly intensify?
I was thinking that I'm glad that the models were mostly showing it not coming toward South Carolina or North Carolina or anywhere close, that it was keeping the storm offshore. I'm glad that's what's actually happened, because we do not want any part of Lee, whether it was a major hurricane strengthening, blowing up to a Category 5, or whether it is what it is now. Either one would be no fun at all for us to deal with. So I'm glad that it's staying well offshore, at least for us. And thinking about the folks up in New England, who it looks like will at least get brushed by this storm in a few days.
We'll be talking later on in the show about the social media interest that went into tracking this storm and how we got so many people, maybe for the first time, trying to understand model comparisons and spaghetti models and what all of that means. That'll be coming up a little bit later on in our program tonight. But we can say that although the storm is offshore, there are still some impacts that are going to be felt here in the Carolinas. The North Carolina Department of Transportation saying that they have crews standing by this evening and all through the weekend along NC-12, you know, a road that carries so much business and commerce and residents along the Outer Banks. And they're watching for the possible impacts from tidal waves and from storm surge related to Lee. So Lee is offshore and will remain offshore. We're looking for the possibility of the winds to hopefully remain offshore, but there is some data tonight that shows that Lee is spreading out, the wind field getting a little bit larger tonight. But we're also watching for the possibility of maximum wave heights. And that's going to play in a little bit if you're going to be along the coast, whether that's in North Carolina, South Carolina, or really all along the east coast of the United States. We're watching for things like rip currents and coastal flooding. So our guest tonight from the National Weather Service office in Newport, Moorhead City, North Carolina, is meteorologist John John, you just told me like 5 minutes ago how to say your name. Ilardo. I'm so sorry. We were going through all of that data, and then there we were. But I got to give you guys some shout out. It was just this afternoon, late this afternoon, that we put a request in to have you guys join us. You're the forecaster on duty there tonight at the local National Weather Service office. And we appreciate you accommodating our request to come on here tonight. And so your area that you guys forecast for includes portions of the Outer Banks and coastal portions of North Carolina. And so although the storm itself is offshore and forecast to remain offshore, there are still going to be some impacts felt in your communities along the coastal portions of North Carolina. Can you tell us what those are?
Yeah, certainly. There's going to be several impacts, and they're all going to be really marine related. The storm is already generating some very large swell, and that swell is being directed in towards the coast of the Carolinas as we speak. As we continue to build and peak sometime tomorrow night and early Friday, and as that swell comes across the beaches, especially at high tide, that's going to produce some beach erosion and eventually lead to some coastal flooding, unfortunately, some overwash of the dunes and probably getting on portions of Highway 12 and maybe affecting travel at the times of high tide. Also, there'll be some very dangerous rip currents because of the swells and the wave energy directed towards the coast. So nobody's being, people are being told not to enter the water over the next several days as these rip currents continue to impact our coast. And we do have a high rip current risk in effect for all the North Carolina coast. And we expect that to continue into the weekend.
Yeah, I'll paint a picture for our audio listeners who might be listening to tonight's program. Your office has put out lots of very helpful infographics, and you guys have a tier, a high, medium, and low risk of rip currents all along the North Carolina coast that you guys forecast for. And it's all solid red tonight and will be for the next few days because of rip currents. If folks are heading to the beach or live at the beach, John, what are some of the telltale signs that there might be a rip current out there? And what should they do if they find themselves trapped in a rip current?
Well, we really don't want anybody to even go into the water. I mean, the only people that will probably be going in the water will be experienced surfers with the kind of wave heights we're expecting that'll be over 8 to 10 feet, maybe even a little higher, right in the surf. So that's extremely dangerous. And not only that, because of the long period between these waves, they're about as powerful as you can get along the coast. You can get injured just by being, tossed around by the waves themselves. So this is not going to be a typical case where you can observe a rip current, but they're in there. There's just so much activity going on. The ocean is going to be so turbulent and with all that wave energy. But also it's going to be an issue is like around high tide, there's going to be some coastal flooding because of all that wave energy coming across on the coast, especially north of Cape Lookout. The east-facing beaches, a lot of our beaches up that way are east-facing. It's a southeasterly swell. So they're going to be more vulnerable to see some coastal flooding at the times of high tide over the next 2 to 3 days.
One of the other slides you guys have in here, as I shift gears from water to wind, talks about the maximum wind gusts that you guys are forecasting Thursday afternoon through Friday to, again, give our audio listeners a cue of what our visual viewers are watching tonight. You guys are talking about maybe maximum wind gusts of 35 miles an hour in Killdevil Hills, 33 at Cedar Island, 29 at Moorhead City. And as we were beginning the show tonight, we were talking a little bit about the wind field from the storm. So the storm itself will be offshore out in the Atlantic. But can you give us a little insight to, as you guys are forecasting, what you're looking for with this storm that will help you forecast and determine those maximum wind gusts?
Yeah, well, what's happening in the Carolinas is the winds that we're going to be experiencing, we are going to have some strong winds developing, aren't going to be directly associated with Hurricane Lee. But what's happening is there's a cold front that's being like dragged southward across the Carolinas right now and associated with the circulation around Lee. And a high pressure is going to build in behind that cold front. And the pressure gradient between the high building in over land and a strong hurricane over the Atlantic, the pressure gradient is going to generate some pretty good northerly winds. So our winds, that we're expecting, the strong winds, are really indirectly related to the hurricane. They're more associated with like we would typically expect, when there's a high and low pressure near each other, you get these strong gradients and resulting strong winds. So those winds on top of, they're going to be coming in at this, in a similar direction to the wave energy. That's another thing that's going to kind of enhance the threat of the rip currents and the coastal flooding across eastern North Carolina.
John, I had a question for you about the tides right now. We have a new moon tomorrow night, so the astronomical tides are running higher than usual, but it looks as though they're not quite as high as we can see during a new moon or a full moon. Can you tell me what the mechanism is behind the tides maybe not being as high as they could be, and maybe the situation for coastal flooding maybe not quite being as bad as they could be?
That's a great point. We have these periodic, really enhanced tidal cycles that occur. They're called, when I first started, they used to call them spring tides, but I think now they're starting to call them king tides. And they're related to the moon cycle, like you mentioned. So we are going into like a higher tide cycle, but it's not going to be the extreme king tide cycle that we've been seeing. So that's going to take a little bit off. That's one good thing that we'll have, that we won't have that, because that'll make the water levels even higher. And we don't want that when we have this kind of a pattern. We want water levels to be as low as they possibly can. So that I mean, although we will be having some higher tides, it won't be the extreme high tides that we get around here with the king tides.
Right. You also mentioned that only experienced surfers should be coming into the waters along the Carolina coast. But even they're going to have to be really careful just because of how the nature of the surf that we're dealing with. It's just the rip current risk is going to be pretty high. And the surf is, as you mentioned, going to be so powerful that this is the kind of thing that gets even people who know how to deal with these conditions into some trouble sometimes.
Yes, I know Deer County put out a press release, and I think they were even saying they would prefer surfers not to go into the water because of the powerful waves and how high they're going to be. So it could be dangerous if you don't have experience. So this is a, you know, if you want to go to the beach, you can stand on the beach and watch the waves, you know, not right up to the water, but at the beach and you know, go at low tide would be the best time to go when the threat of any kind of flooding would be a little bit lower than it would be during high tide.
Yeah, and I know that a lot of surfers are going to be interested in coming to our coast for North and South Carolina because not only do we have the swells coming in from the hurricane, but at least at times the flow is going to be trying to go offshore. A lot of the time when the winds are the strongest, they're going to be more parallel to the coast, and that really does churn things up.
Make
things pretty really choppy.
Yeah, I think that'll be a factor maybe going into Friday. So they might not even be good surf for the surfers because, like you said,
right.
We need to get the flow offshore and clean things up, as they would say. So, yeah, maybe they're better off. Maybe the surf will be a little lower, but the conditions will be more favorable for them.
Right. Yeah. Friday. I think they would say, again, that's what gnarly means, I think, in surf terminology is when it gets that choppy, if my understanding anyway.
Yeah.
I can't say I've ever gone surfing. I don't think I'd be very good at it. You know, guys, it was just a week ago that eyes were glued on this storm, and it was too early to tell as the storm was rapidly intensifying exactly where it would go. We in the Carolinas have lucked out here for the large part that is going to stay out to sea, and we're keeping a close eye on what the impacts could be in New England. But John, it's only a matter of time. It's a when and not an if on when the next big storm might come to the Carolinas. And so this one is not directly coming here, but I'm curious, what can people do now to prepare themselves for future storms?
Now, that's a good point, because if you prepare, you can really minimize the impacts a storm can have on you, because if you wait till like a warning is issued and you try to buy supplies that you may need, or try to arrange for like maybe who someone could where you could place a pet or anything, you know, it can be too late. So it's a good idea to start planning out. You know, you could acquire supplies over the course of the summer, like water, canned goods, maybe, propane for your grill if the power is going to be out for an extended period of time, things like that. Buy a generator if you want to have that for power. So those are things you could do. Also, it's really important to know an evacuation route if you are required to evacuate. A lot of times the evacuations are limited to the like barrier islands, but during Florence, for example, they did evacuate many areas, and that saved a lot of people's lives because of the flooding that occurred with Florence. So it's really good idea to have like contingency plans. Like, if I have to evacuate, where am I going to go? Do I have family I could visit? Do I need to book a hotel someplace? Things like that. So it's always good to have a plan in place so that if the worst does happen, you have options that you can put into place so you can avoid being impacted by the storm.
John, you mentioned Florence, and I can't believe it's been 5 years. If I've got my dates right, tomorrow is the 5-year anniversary of that storm making landfall here in the Carolinas. It feels like a blink of an eye moment ago when we were dealing with all that flooding here in the Carolinas.
Yeah, that was personally for me, that was one of the most intense storms I've had experience. I've been here for over 30 years, and I've been working all of them. That had a lot of impacts for us here right at the office in Carteret County. Several of us were living at the office for almost like a week, just working 12 plus hour shifts, getting a few hours sleep, and then coming back out and working again. We were essentially flooded, trapped by floodwaters just all around the office. It was hard to get in and out for a couple of days. We received about 30 inches of rain in a very short period of time. So it was, yeah, it was really a memorable storm. I'll never forget it. Never forget that storm.
My Florence story, and for people who've been watching our channel long enough, I don't expect anybody to remember this, but if anyone does go and checks it, all of my appearances during our coverage are in a hotel room. I had gone to New York for a family wedding, and then the morning of landfall, I called American Airlines up, probably shouldn't have name dropped them, and I said, I need to move my flight. This thing is going to cause flooding and power outages in Charlotte. And I remember them saying to me, sir, the airport's still open, your flight's still a go. And I was like, I'm moving my flight. And I went around and around with them. I finally came to what I'll call a happy medium, and found a middle road, because you know, you're going to pay change fees and all that stuff. And I, 2 hours later, they started closing the airport down in Charlotte. And you know, sure enough, that night there was power outages and flooding. And I was like, I'm sorry to say I told you so. But I was stuck out of state with my family in New York while we had all that flooding back here in the Carolinas.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, I've been here for 30 years, and, you know, when I first started here and me and my wife were starting our family, I was a big worry, like, what do we do with her and the children? Because I obviously have to work, and I want to work during these things. So, yeah, we'd always have to have a plan. Like, you know, if it goes this way, we're going to send you over here. Or, you know, if it looks like it's going to have this much rain, and we can't send you there because that place is prone to flooding. So we always had a plan in place where, you know, if they had to evacuate or if I felt they should evacuate, we could put it in place so they can be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of the tips you gave us tonight in our conversation about Hurricane Lee will help us in the future for any other storms. John, we appreciate you joining us live. Before we let you go, is there anything else from your office for your communities that you thought would be important tonight that maybe we didn't ask about?
Well, I just want to, you know, reiterate, like, the things we talked about, you know, use this opportunity of us dodging this bullet to prepare in case there's another storm later on this year. We're still in the middle of hurricane season, and so there could be other storms that could develop and may impact us. And also just listen to, you follow the latest forecast and stay out of the water this weekend, and we'll come out of this okay.
I appreciate that. And you mentioned that we are, in fact, in that peak of hurricane season. We'll throw that infamous graph up on the screen, and you can see September 10th, or there's about, is the climatological peak of the hurricane season here in the Atlantic Basin each year. And we've dodged a bullet here in the Carolinas for the most part with Hurricane Lee, the 40th Category 5 storm to ever form in the Atlantic Basin. And we'll keep a close eye on it and thoughts with our friends in New England who might have a brush with it. But John, we appreciate your expertise. We appreciate all the forecasting, all the life-saving operations that you guys do there at the National Weather Service in Newport, Moorhead City, North Carolina. And we appreciate you joining the Carolina Weather Group tonight.
Thank you. Have a good night.
You too. Thanks, John.
You too, John. Thanks for taking your time out of the shift to come and join us.
Thank you.
Frank, were you at AccuWeather still when we had Hurricane Florence?
Yes, I was. That was that from South Carolina's perspective, Florida was not, oh no, not another big flood, because we just had two. We had the one in 15, which was the big one, biggest one, not that the other two weren't big. Then we had Matthew in 16, and then we had Florence again. Each one of them caused a quote unquote thousand year flood in some area in South Carolina. But of course, the 15 flood was the biggest and most widespread one. But still, Matthew was another pretty big flood for us. And then Florence, yet another one that was almost as bad as the 15 flood was. So that was the main thing. There was some wind damage and some coastal flooding, storm surge. I don't remember off the top of my head whether Florence caused tornadoes in South Carolina. Think so, but I don't remember for sure. Either way, the flooding was the most memorable part from Florence, especially since it was the third one in a row.
At the time, we lived near a creek, and you know, creeks in Charlotte, as they are in other portions of the Carolinas, are prone to flooding. They're part of the natural watershed to flow all that water out. But our creek had never really flooded, but there was a dip in the road, and like I mentioned, we were stuck out of state. And I remember our neighbor sent us this picture of the creek, and it just looked like a river. The road was just under it someplace. And I was like, that's our neighborhood. Like, I couldn't even recognize it. It was obviously an intense amount of flooding that so many people remember. Frank, a moment ago, you mentioned kind of disasters, weather-related natural disasters that we have here in the United States. And this year is not even over yet, but we did get some new numbers this week from NOAA that says we are at a record-breaking pace here for a year that is still in progress. 2023 billion-dollar weather and climate disasters already include events like the flooding we saw across the Southeast in March, Hurricane Idalia that we saw in late August, and also many other events across the country, including most recently some very severe floods that our friends again up in the New England and the New York area saw in the lower Hudson Valley. The map, Frank, we see these maps every year. We are a little more than halfway through the year and the map looks relatively full. It looks like a year-end map, and we're only in September.
Yeah, we still have 3.5 months of this year to go. And there's an El Nino going on. So that means the potential for perhaps some extensive flooding in Florida before, California in the Southwest before the year's out. That's what typically happens in El Nino years. They get really wet. I mentioned Florida, probably not a potential for a $1 billion disaster, but El Nino years tend to result in more severe thunderstorms and tornadoes down in Florida. So that's going to be a worry. And we're not done with the tropical season either. We'll see what comes out of Lee in New England. Probably not a $1 billion disaster, but they're the way that the forecast track is now, and that wide wind field of Lee's that will continue to expand, to use a Jimmy Buffett term, changes in latitude, changes in attitude. The storm expands, the winds are less, but the strong winds cover a larger area. So that's what hurricanes do as they head northward. And so potentially a long period of time experiencing hurricane or tropical storm force winds up there. Behind Lee, there's another storm that looks to be developing out just west of Cabo Verde now. The next name on the list is Nigel, so we'll see what happens with that. For now, it looks like it'll follow a Lee-like track, hopefully avoiding the Carolinas. Yes, that's your red area there over the tropical Atlantic right now on the Hurricane Center's outlook. So there are certainly potential for more disasters, maybe even $1 billion ones this year. Hopefully not, but like you said, it looks like a year in map, but there's still a lot of 2023 to go.
Yes, there certainly is. I want to focus now back for a moment, if I could, on Hurricane Lee and bring our audience into something that I know a lot of people were watching, which was the rapid intensification of that storm over a week ago. That storm went from being an invest to a Category 5 hurricane in what I recall to be about a 48, maybe 72 hour period. Whatever it was fast, and was faster than I think anybody really anticipated. And again, looking at this this GIF here that was tweeted out by Dr. Levi Cowan of Tropical Tidbits, you can see that eye wall just formed so clearly, so quickly. And the blessing here was that this storm was out in such a remote area, and they had to fly hurricane hunters out in order to collect data. We've talked about it before here on the show. We've had the privilege of talking to some of the United States Air Force Reserve folks or the NOAA folks. They both operate planes that go out into these storms to collect data, because we have satellites, we have airplanes, but we only have a limited amount of buoys, and we don't obviously have a lot of ground-based detection like we would if it was closer to shore. So we don't have radar and things like that. So in order to get some of the measurements, they had to fly through. And I don't know if you've seen this now, Frank. I'm sure you have the video that these planes, that these folks put out. It was absolutely incredible. This is something that is straight out of a horror show. It's on our Carolina Weather Group YouTube channel if you haven't seen it yet. Just the flashes of lightning as the hurricane hunter is flying through the storm on September 7th. And you can see through the illumination of the lightning that eye wall as they are flying through it. I mean, it's like a horror show where you see the killer slowly getting closer and closer with the different flashes of lightning. That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Well, a Category 5 hurricane like that is a horror show. No two bits about it. And with all that lightning going on in the eye wall, that's a sign of a very intense hurricane that's potentially getting even stronger. That's one of the things we've discovered, is that you don't typically see a lot of lightning in hurricanes, but the most intense ones, especially as they're intensifying, tend to generate a good bit of lightning around the eye wall. So that is just one of those signs, and absolutely a Category 5 hurricane is a horror show.
Yeah, we're lucky this horror show is happening out in the Atlantic. Like we mentioned, there will be coastal impacts here in the Carolinas and stronger impacts for places like Bermuda and into New England. But for the most part, it seems that we've really dodged a bullet with what at one point was a monster Category 5 storm that we were seeing out there on satellite and from those hurricane hunters. I can't imagine what it's like, Frank, to fly through a storm like that. I'm not a guy who likes roller coasters. No. Never mind, like the turbulence. Right. It's got to be insane.
Right. Okay. Imagine being on a flight. If you're someone who's flown a good bit in your life, imagine the worst turbulence that you've ever experienced. Chances are the hurricane hunters experienced worse turbulence than that. I say that, you know, cautiously. I've experienced some pretty nasty turbulence before, but and going through a Category 5 hurricane, it is pretty doggone bumpy.
Yeah.
It is a rough flight, and that's with the pilot using his radar to kind of navigate a relatively weak spot in the eye wall to go through.
I'm putting on the screen right now some video from our Carolina Weather Group Hurricane Special. It airs every season here on our feed, but I'm putting it on the screen because it includes this interview that Chris Jackson did at the Charlotte Douglas International Airport in 2019. Matter of fact, let's see here. There was another storm that was coming in around this time too, if I'm not mistaken, but you can see that radar at the bottom of this NOAA plane. I think this is Kermit, if I'm not mistaken. And you can just kind of see the thing that always gets me is it's a propeller plane, right? It's propelled by blades that spin because they can't use the jet engines inside the hurricane. That always just blows my mind.
Right. Yeah. Jet engine, my understanding, it doesn't work because it'll ingest too much water and the engine will stop running. And that's the last thing you want to have happen when you're in the eye wall of a hurricane. So they use propeller planes instead, prop driven engines.
Yeah, you can see they have equipment on board to see some of their real-time data, including their own radar that is on the plane, and they're dropping radio sondes. So they're dropping equipment that transmits back via radio that takes temperature and pressure and other atmospheric condition readings to really understand what's happening in the storm. But they are flying through the storm. It's insane.
Exactly. Those drop sondes are basically the same instrument that's attached to a weather balloon, which takes what we call a sounding, and the balloon takes it up and takes pressure, temperature, and dew point measurements on the way up. Well, a drop sun does the exact same thing, except you drop it out of the airplane, it falls, and it takes measurements on the way down instead.
We are really lucky that we have men and women who are willing to fly into storms to get us this weather data, because then it gets ingested into those weather models that help make the weather models more accurate. Just like with trying to predict a route and trying to predict traffic data, the more data you have on how people drive and where cars are at certain times of day, same analogy here with weather and understanding exactly what's happening. Understanding the now helps us understand the later, because Frank, it was, as we've mentioned a couple times during tonight's show, just a week ago, that I feel like Chief Meteorologist Brad Panovich at WCNC Charlotte was trying to calm all of the TikTok fears about one model run or one piece of spaghetti from the sea of spaghetti models that might have taken it into Florida or into the Carolinas or into the mid-Atlantic, when he was trying to say, we don't know yet where this will be more than 10 days out. And even if we did, we have to look at the full spread of model data. Were you having a lot of the same conversations, Frank?
Yes, I think I posted the Douglas Adams quote, "Don't panic," from Hitchhiker's Guide on Twitter once, because there was a lot of buzz about, oh, well, you know, 10 to 20% of the ensembles were bringing Lee close to the East Coast. And it's like, well, just, that means 80% of them have it out to sea. And it's most likely not going to be a direct hit for us. Yes, we can't rule it out yet, but don't panic yet.
Yeah.
Do prepare, because I mean, even if we don't get a hit from Lee, it's only halfway through the hurricane season. So yes, have your hurricane kit stock. Yes, know what you need to do, but you know, we're not panicking yet. So I did have to kind of tell people to calm down. And that just comes with the territory of being a meteorologist sometimes, I guess. But you get hypesters on social media and elsewhere, you know, saying, you know, playing up what might happen because one model run or what one ensemble solution has, or what two or three out of an ensemble of 50 ensemble members have are showing. So it's the thing you have to deal with sometimes. But yeah, I kind of had a lot of those same conversations.
And lo and behold, we have dodged that bullet this time. And as Frank mentioned, it doesn't hurt to be prepared for the next time. Before we go, we're coming up to the 30-minute mark on this week's edition of the Carolina Weather Group. One of those tweets I just had up had a couple other things that were on the screen that I feel like have been on our channel over the course of the last week or so. But I know last week on our official weekly Wednesday drop, we had a rerun of our Jim Cantore interview. He's always a blast to talk to. So if you haven't heard, the astronauts who were aboard of NASA's SpaceX Crew 6 did return home with a splashdown. We had live coverage of that right here on the Carolina Weather Group from my handy dandy garage set. Because when it gets too late into the evening hours, as I'm sure it is right now, my wife doesn't really like to hear me projecting very loudly into this microphone. So I get sequestered into the garage. And that's where we were when those astronauts came home a little after midnight last week. So if you want to check it out, you can find it on our Carolina Weather Group YouTube channel. And notice the trains, Frank. The table is right over the train table.
Of course there are trains. why would I not expect to see trains? I fully expect to see trains. This is not a surprise.
I got one guy corner. I don't have a shed, so this is my space in the garage. So I've got the train stacked on top of the streaming equipment when it comes to needing to be in the garage.
Yeah. All right, real quick before we go, I went and looked it up. Advisory 1 on Lee is a tropical depression, was 15Z, 11 p.m. or 11 a.m. rather, on the 5th. Advisory 11, it was a Cat 5 hurricane. Those advisories are 6 hours apart. So 66 hours from it's a tropical cyclone to it's an advisory.
I tried to put some music on there, and I think it drowned Frank out. So you said 62 hours?
66 hours. 66. 11 advisories.
Official estimate of 48, and then I couched it to 72. I was in the ballpark.
You're in the ballpark, yeah.
I appreciate you fact-checking me, though. My memory is, I don't know if anybody else listening or watching tonight has school-age kids, but my brain has not adjusted to waking up early to get these kids to school on time, and I am just dragging in the evenings.
I just wanted to have the truth out. PolitiFact, mostly true.
Hey, I'll take it. Thank you for looking that up, Frank. And before we go, I want to scroll the names of my favorite people. These are our Patreon supporters at patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group. They help make this show possible for just $1 a month. They get kind of cool goodies and behind the scenes and early access to things. And I'm announcing here that we're going to have a contest coming up from now through the end of October, that at the end of October, we're going to be picking one of these super fans to be getting a sweet super fan kit in the mail. That's going to include some Carolina Weather Group swag, including this collectible one of one Carolina Weather Group tumbler. There's only one of these and I have resisted opening it. And it's still here on my desk. So
a unique item. This will be quite valuable when we reach the 1,000,000 subscriber mark.
I mean, maybe by then I'll have ordered a couple more tumblers. But if you won the first tumbler, still sealed in the bag, please join us at patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group.
By the time we get to the point we have that many subscribers, we will have a totally different logo, a totally different design. That's going to be a unique one. That's always going to be a one of one.
That's going to be. I mean, we might even change colors. It's blue now, but who knows what it'll be in the future. There'll be a hat in there. There'll be some of these cool stickers. These are the super fan stickers we gave out of the Shield Museum. Frank was there. So these are kind
of those are not one of one. I've got a few of those.
These are the good stickers. They're like the die cut like vinyl sticker that lasts. Mm-hmm. So if you want to potentially win this gift bag for yourself or maybe you're married to a super fan, it's great for the holiday season. Patreon.com/Carolina Weather Group. One of those folks will be getting this at the end of October. And if for some reason you don't win or you just don't want to wait that long, you can always head over to our merch store at any time. Ways that you can support this show. Frank and I aren't making any money, but we do need to keep the lights on. So it helps pay just our reoccurring bills. And we appreciate your continued support. If you're not in a position to give, then the best thing you could do for us is just share the link with a friend to this week's show. Maybe your favorite show and say, hey, take a listen to this. You might enjoy this podcast. All right, Frank, I can't believe that 35 minutes went real fast.
Sure did.
It's always a pleasure. We will see everybody here back real soon. We haven't forgotten about our Rail Fanning special that we promised over the summer. It is still coming. It's still in edit. And we'll keep an eye on our topics. So stay tuned, stay subscribed, hit the bell, all of those things. And we'll see you back here next week for another edition of the Carolina Weather Group. Good night.
Bye, y'all.